From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in 1941 with a man named Buddy and a woman named Eleanor. Buddy was a young man with a promising future. He had a good job working as a mechanic on warplanes, but his head and his heart were somewhere else, with Eleanor. Eleanor's cousin Tony introduced the two, and Buddy couldn't stop thinking about Eleanor. He sent her letter after letter after letter in an effort to get to know her better. And at first, she laughed and even corrected his grammar, but soon their letters became love letters. And over time, they did fall in love. Their letters are a timeline of their romance. Buddy and Eleanor's story is captured in a beautiful film called Dear Eleanor, written, directed, and produced by their daughter, Tina Chapman DaCosta. The award-winning film has a number of themes, but in our conversations with Tina, we've keyed in on the letter-writing theme. It's a subject that she is passionate about, and she's leading workshops and classes to teach people the art and value of letter-writing. Just yesterday, we asked Tina, why don't people write letters anymore? I mean, apart from the obvious, I guess we don't have to most of the time, but according to a survey by CBS News in 2021, just under a third of American adults said they wrote a personal letter in the previous 12 months. 37% said it had been more than 5 years since they had written and sent any personal letters, and many said they had never, ever done it at all. So when is the last time you wrote a letter, a pen to paper, put it in an envelope, put it in the mail, letter? In this digital world, is the paper letter a thing of the past? Well, this hour we explore tangible communication in a digital age. It's a continuation of a conversation we had on this program on Monday about how the culture of communication has changed dramatically with technology. Will forms of the past be back in vogue like vinyls? Or is letter writing basically done? Let's welcome our guest now, Tina Chapman DaCosta, founder and director of Diversity Theater, a professor and filmmaker at RIT. And we are honored to have you back here. Thank you for being here.
Oh, Evan, thank you so much for the invitation. And thank you for that wonderful description of Dear Eleanor. It gave me a warm feeling, too, of just the way you described it. So thank you so much.
We're going to dive in, and we can't wait, because this is right in my sweet spot. I'm a little old school, and we'll talk about why our guests think that there's real value in putting pen to paper. And someone who's learning about that's an RIT student. Matthew Eggers is on the line with us. Hi, Matthew. Thanks for being with us.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me on.
And welcome as well in studio to Rebecca Freites-Dupre. Becky is founder of Walt Day. The founder of the Write a Letter Today program. We say Walt Day, right?
Yes.
All right. Write a Letter Today. And that's lovely. Tell us about what Walt Day is.
Walt Day is just basically you teaching people to the simplicity of taking a piece of paper, a pen or a pencil, and just conveying your thoughts or your feelings. And I tell the kids, it's like, listen, I'm like, the Bible has 2,000-year-old letters in it. Why not you? You know, that's how powerful letter, the written word is. So I teach the kids, we can really impact and help other people by taking just a few minutes.
And Becky, where do you do this program?
I do it on the Sunday school, but I have done it at 4-H. I have actually my girlfriend's Brandy's Cup of Joe coffee shop. I actually had one time a letter writing to our veterans. And anywhere, I just teach everybody. I've done it in so many different scenarios. Because it's just simple.
But when you say, well, why not pick up a pen and paper and write a letter? I think a lot of younger people would say, well, why would I? I could just text somebody. What do you say to that?
It's like I tell them, it's like texting is fine, except it's gone. It will be gone. Nobody will ever remember the words of wisdom, your sentiment, the history. We know a lot of history, as a matter of fact, because of the letters that were written, and I tell them, I'm like, Abraham Lincoln, he was a feisty little guy. So we have letters of him and his thoughts. So
yeah, that's a really interesting point, because and I think I want to ask all of our guests about this. There is a benefit and a cost to communication being really fleeting and ephemeral. So part of what Becky is describing is I think of the Seward House in Auburn, and I think of what the University of Rochester's archives and others have. And we've learned so much about Seward and, yes, Lincoln and so many others in past eras, pre-technological eras, because of their letters that have survived. Mm-hmm. And in some ways, for me, I think it's just really beautiful and interesting to see how people lived and how they communicated. And in other ways, mm-hmm. it's very important and insightful when you're trying to understand, you know, what was happening, especially at times of war, at times when the Civil War was happening. We've learned a lot through those. So you're right about that. On the other hand, I think there are people who would say, thank goodness my communication isn't preserved. I'd be so embarrassed. And, you know, shouldn't we just let it vanish with the wind? Isn't that a better thing than having it preserved for the ages, Becky? What do you think?
Oh, I don't know. I try to tell kids that, again, I have worked with teenagers and adults, but I mainly focus on the children. And I tell them, it's like, you know, for example, my friend Teresa, her husband was deployed over in Afghanistan, and we wrote, and we had the blessing that he came and he told the kids, it's like, you know, that letter that you wrote and, you know, those pictures that you made for us, that was gold. That really helped me to keep going, so that even though that sometimes they do say, well, this is silly, or, you know, I don't know if I should be writing that. It's like, look, we have a live person tell us that it really meant something to them. And actually, I was telling Tina that there was a flag flown in honor of Walt Day because it really impacted them. But even the neighbor. And even as you were mentioning, Tina, even, you know, for your parents, or, you know, you don't know. And I teach them that. It's like, you don't know how God is going to use that to bless somebody. That those words or the silliness. I had a lady, she had an accident and she wasn't wearing the helmet. And one of the kids wrote, why weren't you wearing your helmet? What were you thinking? Mm. And I thought, should I send that with the other letters or not? And I did. And she actually thought it was pretty funny, you know?
So. I mean, it's so different. It's and to me, this is one of the biggest cultural changes in my lifetime, mm-hmm. Tina. In my teenage years, I was a camper and then a counselor at a YMCA camp on Chautauqua Lake. And every day after lunch, there was mail call. And if you got three letters in a single day, you couldn't get the third letter until you sang a song in front of the whole camp. So they would call your name for a letter. And then if they called your name again, the whole camp would go, 1, 2, we want 3, because we wanted to make you sing, see? So if you had a faraway girlfriend or if you had parents who wanted to send you letters, they knew to send you 3 in a day. I mean, kids did that. Wasn't that long ago? That was the 1990s, and that is gone. I mean, I'm sure there are bigger cultural changes in terms of communication, but to me, this is a big one. What do you think?
Oh, yes, it is. I mean, it's the immediacy, right? So when I was talking to my mother, who's 98 years young, Eleanor, the name of the film, she was telling me that they received letters twice a day. So there was a daytime delivery and an evening delivery. And so when they were courting, she and my father, they were expecting a letter, at least a letter a day. Maybe not 2 a day, but at least a letter a day. So no one made them sing if they got 3 a day, you know, like you. But there was also that immediacy in terms of how letters were being mailed. So now today, fast forward, it may take 5 days to get a letter, depending on where you're sending it to, or if you're going across country. Yes, it could take a week. I have family also in Germany. It takes, you know, 2 or 3 weeks. It doesn't compare when you can send a text message very quickly and instantaneously. And so when someone wants to get some communication out quickly, even if it's just a short blurt or what we used to call a tweet, right, they can immediately do it. So this concept of, oh, waiting for weeks for someone to get a response is sort of not thought about today when we only compare it to how much time it takes. But if we think about what Becky is talking about and what you were talking about, if we think about the impact of that message, of the care that went into and the thoughtfulness to write that out and send it, and then to receive it and hold it in your hand, someone's actual handwritings and someone touch, it's just as golden as getting someone's signature autograph, right? If we get an autograph, we're going to hold on to that. So it doesn't compare when you say how long it takes to receive the letter. To me, that's not the discussion. It's more like, what really is the impact? And I would love to see us continue to do short tweets and texts and emails, but also be able to spend that time to send a thoughtful correspondence that has, you know, your own handwriting and signature on it. And maybe the next best thing is an email, but like Becky said, we normally don't keep those things because we're all running out of storage. So you really can't hold on to all of that unless you find a way to archive it. So it's a different discussion when you think about the value and the impact of those letters.
I like the word impact, because just recently, my girlfriend's daughter, who I was in my classes of Walt Day, she was 11 years old, and she wrote a letter to my mom, who was very scared to go for surgery. She's 78. And she said it was her letter that gave her courage to go ahead and have that surgery done. And that's how much impact it had.
Yeah, so. And I can see that. And I also keyed in on Tina using the word impact because, you know, I think everybody can relate to getting a text and feeling like, oh, do I have to respond to this? Or I don't know if I have time, or I'm in the middle of something. And it feels a little bit like a bother. So that's happened. It might have just happened to me right now. when you get a handwritten letter, it is so different because it immediately says to you that that person cares about you enough to actually do the act of sitting down, writing something, putting it in the mail, sending it to you. And it is so much more of an investment of their time that you can't doubt that they care about you in some way, that they are thinking about you. And to me, the weight of that communication and what it signifies is just different. I'm not saying it's worse, and I'm not trying to just be sort of the technology curmudgeon, although maybe a little. But I think the weight of it, Tina, is so different. And I kind of miss that, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, I think for those of us who experience receiving letters, and now we're in our, you know, digital communication age in another way, we have something that we miss, right? We know the difference and we feel it. So now when, like you asked that earlier question, how do you explain that or give value to it to someone who doesn't have that experience, whose whole life has mainly been surrounded by how quickly can I get through communications in the shortest amount of words or syllables and digits and all those kinds of things? And yes, there are things that we want to cherish and put in letters. And then there are other things that, yeah, it works well to send it in a different way. I have two sons and a daughter, and some wonderful daughters and sons through marriage. And my sons don't communicate as much as my daughter does. But my sons will send me maybe a text message that says, "Hey, Mom, thinking about you." And my daughter will call me more so than maybe some of the sons, at least my youngest son. He'll just send me a text, "I'm thinking about you," when he was in
nothing.
College.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, and I knew there was a lot in that.
Sure.
You know, because I knew his communication style.
This yeah,
was,
right.
Or, you know, I wanted to at least get something. But I have a letter that my mother wrote me, and I think it's 1999. I was going through some very challenging times. And it was a American greetings card, actually. And it says something like, "If you ever forget who you are, just look in the mirror and you will see the person that we all love and adore," you know, that kind of thing. And I saved it. And it helped me make a hard decision in my life, giving me the courage to make that decision when I got that letter. It was the timeliness of it. It came at a time when maybe there were other messages coming in and out, but that one card gave me my grounding that I needed to know that I had her support and that she believed in me. And sometimes that's what those letters do for others. We let them know that not only how you described it, that I'm thinking of you and I'm taking the time to do this, but I believe in you. I care about you. Mm-hmm. And that's what we want to be able to help people who haven't had those experiences to experience that. And so that way they can add that to their communication toolbox in addition to everything else that's coming down the pike, you know, in terms of how we communicate. Because as human beings, we want to connect. We have to connect. I don't care what anyone says. You have to connect. Even if you buy a plant and talk to it, you have to connect with some living being.
Absolutely. And that's a theme of both of our hours on this Friday. And listeners will pick up on that. And we're going to talk about Dear Eleanor a little bit more in a moment, if you don't mind, Tina.
Sure.
But let me ask you, you know, when you meet students like Matthew Eggers, who's on the line with, we're going to talk to Matthew in a moment about, you know, what he thinks about letter writing and whether this all sounds sort of quaint to a student. But tell me what you're trying to do with students and how you end up with students like Matthew.
Oh, thank you for asking. So you've already introduced the film and talked about that. So what I do with the film, it's a short film. It's about 18 minutes long. I've been given the wonderful opportunity to share a community building workshop at RIT with all of our incoming freshmen. And the class is only about 50 minutes long. It's part of the year one programs there that are just wonderful team of folks that put this together for all of our 3,000 students every year. And so in that experience, they see the film. It does talk about letter writing, or it's, you know, as you described, it goes through the process of my parents communicating via letter writing in the 1940s. And then afterwards, I get an opportunity to have students think about how does that relate to their lives today. Not only do we discuss intercultural communications and other things that are in conflict for effective communication to occur in the story of my parents' up and down courtship of, like, my father doesn't respond in the way my mother expected in the letter, and she corrects that letter kind of thing. Now, I did take a little bit of creative licensing with some of that. So, Mom, I know it was a little bit different in terms of how you may have did that. But through that, the students get a chance to vicariously experience what those individuals did in their challenges in the 1940s. But more specifically, when you talk about the letter writing, we do two things. In the workshop that Matthew was a part of, we do an intercultural communication exercise afterwards. They meet in small groups, and they're able to introduce themselves to each other, prompted by a few facilitated questions that comes from Keith Jenkins, who's a professor of communication at RIT. And with that, they talk about their upbringing, what kind of neighborhood they went through, what their cultural identities are, even if they've never thought they had a cultural identity. And so we make a connection in a short period of time, but we want to keep those conversations going, and they do it in their reflection cycle the week later. The other piece that we do when we meet for more of the workshop that's all in person, because some of this is done online, but in the workshop, I have an opportunity to give them some writing tools, and I wanted to
expand this. That's what you shared with me
further.
Here?
Yep. I did.
Yep. I love it. Yep.
So we encourage them to write a love letter, because we did a workshop for RIT's Freeze Fest in February, and we called, I don't know, something about warming your heart in love in the wintertime. Love in the wintertime. I forget, something like that, that our creative team helped me come up with. And so after experiencing the film, I encourage them to write a love letter, either to themselves or to someone who may have been passed on or deceased, or to someone that they're thinking about. It could be a pet. It could be a parent. It could be, you know, anyone. And then I had a box for them to put it in. So they didn't mail it to the post office, but they put it in a box as to say, this is my testament of this love letter. And they get stickers and some other things, you know, to help with that process. So I think it was Monday, this idea came to me, and Becky and I were talking about, you know, when the Holy Spirit gives us ideas, about expanding that to try to get people to actually write letters, you know, writing letters to loved ones or to a high school counselor or a parent, or an apology letter or a letter to them future
like
selves.
The apology
letter. Because I know when I first came to college as a freshman, I started thinking about where did I come from? And I started writing letters to my grandmother to ask her about our family history. So I wanted to expand upon that. And I also wanted to partner with the National Warplane Museum in Geneseo. They were the location of the film, Dear Ellen North. They've been a wonderful partner, great people out there, Austin and Donna and the rest of their group. They have an exhibit that they are looking to expand and create called Letters Home. Donna, if I got the name wrong, but it was Letters from Home is the exhibit at the National Warplane Museum. So we have been talking now about how to partner with them to do Letters Home and Letters from Home, because they have a collection of letters that people wrote during wartime, and they want to have a way to exhibit and showcase those. And I also have my parents' collection of letters, you know, from that time period, too. So
I have a question for it. When your mom was writing to your dad, did she ever say, like, when she was writing, it was like an intimate time, like that intimacy in the sense of nobody else is chiming in, or I don't know how to explain it, but Go ahead.
I'm feeling what you're saying. I'm over here going, yes, yes, yes. So my mother is a very private person. And so when I was writing the script for Dear Eleanor, which comes from Brick by Brick, the larger script, I did not have her letters. And I knew I could not put into the film those actual words that they shared from those letters because it was so intimate and so private. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying it was risque or anything like that.
No,
maybe she didn't show me those.
Yeah.
But but that it had that level of intimacy. And think about it. And I even tell my students this, and Matthew might recall, this is the 1940s. So people weren't calling long distance readily like we do today. And you couldn't text and so forth. So you had to put all of that feeling and authenticity in what you were writing. I know there's one letter. Well, I'll just say this. So when I finished this, when I did the movie, my mother surprised me. She gifted me with all of her letters. She gave me this box of letters. She said, because I know I can trust you with them, you know, what you do with them. And so I know I have to, you know, be very considerate because this is, you know, their lives. But it is from the 1940s and it's been some time. But having those opportunities to read some of the letters now, looking at it, there's one when Joe Louis was the boxer who was fighting. And I can't remember who. I'm sorry. I don't know my boxing history. But when the Brown Bomber beat somebody and became the heavyweight champ, and everyone was tuned into their radios to listen to it, it was like 1940. 40 or 41 or something.
This is a boxing man.
Yeah, Joe Louis.
Joe Louis.
Yeah, look at it.
Sonny Liston. I'm trying to think here.
Yeah, go look up Joe. I forget. Anyway, so there's a letter that my father wrote to my mother, and he starts off saying, you know, of course, it's nice and tender. And he says, yeah, we're getting ready to watch the boxing match. You know, we hope Joe Louis, you know, does what he needs to do. And he said, and Mom is getting all excited. And, you know, I'll talk to you after the fight. So then there's just a little break in the letter. I mean, it's just skipping space. And then he comes back. Yes, he won. Joe Louis won. And this, you should see Mom. She's jumping up and down and this, this, and other. So he was writing this letter in real time as he is preparing to watch this historic boxing match and then the result of it. And so it has that intimacy, authenticity, and almost like real time. It's like being like chatting with someone, you know, when you're watching a movie mm-hmm. together. And anyway, so that's what letters were for them.
I love that. And Joe Louis was known as the Brown Bomber, I'm reading. And I'm looking, and, you know, this would have been in the 40s, right?
Right.
You know, there's a number. There's too many big wins for me to figure out here. But that it's so cool. I mean, it's just, to me, that is, I find that such a cool snapshot in time. And I want to ask Matthew Eggers what he thinks of all this as an RIT student who is, Matthew, can I ask, how old are you, sir?
I'm 18.
18 years old. So, I mean, I don't want to be, you know, sort of condescending. I mean, like, the reality is you're 18. There probably hasn't been, maybe I'm wrong, there probably hasn't been a reason for you to send a lot of letters. I mean, you can communicate in a lot of different ways without writing letters, right?
No, unfortunately, you're right. I'm trying to hop on to write some letters to my grandparents and my parents, but, you know, it's just a reality of today that, for the most part, especially amongst my generation, sending letters to each other is unheard of. It's like gift giving, honestly, you know, mm-hmm. it's that precious.
So that's a great word for it, actually. Mm-hmm. It is precious in a way that we would not describe a text message or an email. Definitely not an email. But I really do appreciate that word because I think it encapsulates what we've been talking about. It is just a different intimacy of communication. So, Matthew, what do you make of everything you've heard from Professor Chapman DaCosta here? And I hope, you know, I hope this has all been instructive. I wonder, you know, sort of what you come away thinking about the whole process of letter writing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, she's absolutely right. You know, it's such a, well, first of all, letters convey such a higher degree of intimacy, you know, and second of all, the cultural change in communication in general and thought process amongst my generation from just the, you know, kind of speed that's taken for granted has really just like, I mean, I don't know. I feel like it's kind of, how do I put it? Inflated the value of words, written word. I don't know. Yeah, it's unfortunate, but yeah, I definitely agree. Yeah, with all of her points.
Yeah, I mean, the idea of taking instant communication for granted is absolutely part of this. When I was in college, my freshman year was 97, and you know, we had dot matrix printers, which I thought were kind of fast, a little slow. And then if we wanted to get on the internet, which was a brand new thing, we had to use the phone line. So like your landline in your dorm room or your landline in your house was often taken up because you had to use the line. And I thought that was pretty fast. You know, I'm like, wow, I'm using this internet and it's fast. And now if there's like a 6-second ad before a video I want to watch, I get like furious. It's like, how dare you block my, these 6 seconds could have been used doing something. And that shift has happened so fast because, you know, letter writing was happened forever. And all of a sudden it's mostly gone as a form of necessity. It's now it's a form of intimacy and sort of extra, but it's not kind of needed anymore. And it's just, I like to take stock of what that means because boy, that has happened fast. And people might think, well, it's not that fast. It's been 20, 25 years, but in the scope of human history, that is a blink of an eye. How fast we have changed how we communicate. So, Matthew, does that mean going forward you will occasionally write a little bit more pen to paper? You will do some more of that now?
Yes, absolutely. This film has definitely inspired me to keep writing and write more. Yeah,
Matthew, if no one was listening, what would you say about your professor though? Because I mean, I know I'm just kidding.
What?
Wonderful
professor. And wonderful film. Like, really, it was just such a beautiful story. And I have to say, there were so many elements that actually, like, lingered with me, especially, like, you know, the bravery of Tony, you know, like, even in a world that, like, you know, is out to get him, he's still himself. And so that's something that's really been inspiring.
See, Tina, he gets it.
He does. And I didn't even, well, I was going to say, I didn't even pay him, but that's so cliche. but Matthew, no, thank you for your honesty and your openness to share this. And, you know, I'm glad you mentioned Tony and Tony's story. And even though I don't have any letters from Tony, Tony isn't my cousin, but in the film, Tony's a composite character between my cousin and someone that my father grew up with. And Tony is someone who is, we would today call a transgender woman, but in the 1940s, Tony had to simulate in order to survive. In order to survive. But if we had an opportunity to even read some of Tony's letters in terms of the real Tony and the real person who was also my father's neighbor, that would give us some insights, too, into what their challenges and successes, we'll say, have been. But I'm thankful that we get a chance to see a snapshot view of Tony's story, because that is important just as much as Buddy and Eleanor's stories are important. And even today, because there are some who see the film that's set in the 1940s and they're surprised that there was a transgender woman in the 1940s, as if transgender people did not exist prior to, you know, the past decade or so. And so it's just a way to give more awareness and attention and more inclusion of who we are, and that we're all here and we're on this planet and we've got to work together, you know, to survive for today, tomorrow, and the next.
I want to get a quick email. Hey, the instant communication that we've been talking about. Yeah. Rick writes to say, Evan, I believe it was Max Schmeling or Max Schelling that Joe Louis defeated in his second bout with him. You might be talking about that fight. That might be it.
I think so. That name sounds very familiar.
Way to go, Rick. Thank you very much, Rick. And when we come back from our only break of the hour, I will ask our guests a little bit about what I think will. I think there is still one written form of communication, person to person, that will sort of be with us in perpetuity, and not just out of being something quaint, but something that is still valued and sometimes expected and needed. We'll talk about that. And I want to talk more to our guests about, you know, how they have seen the personal impacts of this epistolary, you know, form that I miss. And certainly Becky will have more to share about that. Rebecca Freitas Dupre is founder of the Walt Day, the Write a Letter Today program. It's great. And Tina Chapman DaCosta is with us, founder and director of Diversity Theater, professor and filmmaker at RIT, the filmmaker of Dear Eleanor that we've been talking about. Matthew Eggers is an RIT student who is with us. Listeners, if you want to share, you know, your thoughts, I would love to know when the last time you sent a letter was. You know, was it in the last 5 years? Was it in the last year? Was it 25 years ago? Was it never? I mean, it's CBS News' survey found like all of those answers are kind of in play now. It's amazing. 844-295-TALK if you want to join the program on the phone. 844-295-8255. 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester. 263-9994. You can email the program. Email. It's instant. Connections@WXXI.org. Coming up in our second hour, a new program puts college students with older adults living together, dining together, and maybe building relationships. We are more isolated. We're not spending as much time together physically with one another. And many of us are reporting higher levels of loneliness across all age groups. So we'll explore how this program might change that next hour. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Dallas emails to program asking about our predecessor here, the great Bob Smith. Dallas wants to know, when Bob Smith hosted the show, did he do the show prior to email? And I wonder, were there just more phone callers, more dialogue with his guests? Oh, Dallas, Bob hosted the show from 1988 to 2013. And he's a legend. So yes, he was doing it before email, and he was wonderful. Bob got plenty of letters. And this show, by the way, we still get handwritten letters, and I always love that. I love it. Even when they're really kind of nasty. I don't love those. But hey, that's part of the job. But some people still send us handwritten letters, and I want you to know we read all of them. One of the things that I would always like to do better is try to get back to every possible little, and they're not little to me, but a letter, an email, anything. But I want you to know that we get those. To finish the point there, Dallas, yeah, Bob got letters, handwritten. He got plenty of phone calls, and he was just super, super prepared and did a wonderful job. We all existed before. Actually, not Matthew. Matthew didn't exist before email, but the rest of us did. We did, and the world, it was an amazing thing. Like I was joking the other day. My 11-year-old was saying to me, "You would just answer the phone not knowing who was calling you?" And I said, "Yes." And he was like, "That seems really risky." And I'm like, "Yeah, well, it was always an adventure. Phone's ringing. You don't know who it's going to be." So whenever he goes back to Cleveland and sees my mother, his grandmother, he's always so excited. He's like, "Can I use their landline? Can I use the landline?" He gets very, very excited. So a lot is changing. But Dallas, thank you for that. Bob was great at it. And before I jump to your phone calls, Maureen, I'll grab your call in just a second. If you're on the line, hang there for one moment. My 11-year-old is writing handwritten thank you letters and thank you cards this week, thanking people who supported his baseball fundraiser. And that's something that we mandate. Like, you're going to thank everybody, and you're not going to text them, and you're not like, you're not whatever. And he doesn't have a phone yet, but you know, you're going to do it by hand. And I think that's the written form of communication that's going to survive no matter how technological we get, because I think that people will always know that that took more time and effort and consideration. And I think as a gesture, it will endure, I hope. Becky, what do you think?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, my kids, I had to train them too. It's like, no, if abuelita, I'm from Puerto Rico, so, and I'm like, if abuelita took her time to write to you or send you, you know, the little grandma $20, you know, it's like, you take your time and you write to her. It's like, oh, I'll call her. And I'm like, let me make that clear. You write to her and say thank you. And so they still all do. And I always tell them, don't forget to put the date, because then they'll know.
Oh, I love that too.
Yes, don't forget to put the date.
I used to not only write the date, I would write the time that I was writing it. I'd write 9:44 p.m. And those who were writing with me would do the same thing. And I actually look back now, and I'm kind of glad I did, because I for some reason, I just find that
it's kind of fun.
Yeah, it's like another little window. Everything is timestamped now, but I would actually write. So anyway, I love that. I'm glad you do the date. Tina, what do you think? Thank you letters as opposed to a thank you text or you know, some other form of communication. Will that survive?
Yes, it will, because people are starting to try to do things a little differently. They're trying to stand out, I think, in their forms of communication. And yes, we use Eventbrite and things like that to invite people and send, you know, messages back. But I've been receiving more and more handwritten thank you notes from you know, from brides and grooms, you know, thanking us, mm-hmm. people who have showers and mm-hmm. so forth. Mm-hmm. And so I find that they're using those means. Excuse me.
It's okay. Take your time. That's all right. Well, just
I was trying to push the cough button. Sorry about that. I guess I could say, oh, I'm getting all choked up when I think about the handwritten letters I received. You know, but it's nice. I've even gotten one just recently that was illustrated in terms of a personal illustration
on
a thank you card.
Wow.
Yeah. So that was nice. So I do see people using that more and more than they have in the past. But I also just want to say this. I like how you said the thoughtfulness that goes into writing. Mm-hmm. So sometimes people might write a letter that they shouldn't mail. Perhaps they're venting. Perhaps there's an initial response
yes.
to something. And there's joy and wisdom in reflection, right? And it's okay to write it, but give some thought to it even after you've written it and look at it, especially if there's an emotional motivation that's extra charged, either positive or negative.
I have done that a couple of times. I wrote the letter and then it's like, maybe not.
So what you're telling me, Tina, is this is interesting.
That's a good point.
This is the true story. In my basement, thanks to my mother, I have a box of dozens of my younger life letters. Most of them from the 90s. Some of them family letters written over summers. Some, you know, love letters or from ex-girlfriends, whatever. And there's one letter that I kind of thought, there's no way this is true. And it was an ex who hadn't gone great with us. And she was, it's a long story. It's not even worth telling. But what she writes there is, I've written like 100 letters and this is the only one I've ever sent. And I thought, come on. But what you're saying is that act is actually kind of cathartic, or there's some value in writing a letter that you don't send. Mm-hmm. So maybe I shouldn't have been so cynical about that. It's possible that that actually happened. Okay?
It is. It's definitely true. It's happened to me. Perhaps it's happened to other people too, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
but then, like I think you said to us, maybe it was during the break, that you have these love letters.
One day when something falls through on the program, we're just going to read the box of my old letters on the show.
Never. Yeah, and as time goes by, here's the other side of it. In that time of reflection or time of growth, and then looking back at what you wrote 10, 20, 30 plus years ago, you get a chance to see your transformation mm-hmm. from where you were then to where you are now. I also journal write, and so looking at those things over the past 20 years gives me an insight too as to how mm-hmm. I have evolved and changed or healed in some regard. And so there's something about, even if you're writing to yourself, like the diary or the journal writing, or having your box of love letters that you kept.
Well, speaking of insight, I had and this is really quick. I was going to buy a quilt, and I met this Amish woman. And to make the story short, I started corresponding with her. Mm. And one day I went to Lancaster and decided I'm going to find her, you know. So I took the address. I got there. And the lady's like, oh, you're looking for Priscilla? And I'm like, yes, I'm looking for her. And he goes, who are you? And I go, well, I'm Rebecca. And she goes, Rebecca! And I was like,
that's wonderful.
Okay, she knows me. And then she was at her sister, so I went to her sister, same reaction. And then the next thing you know, it's like they used to take my letters and gather as a family.
Oh.
And read them.
Oh.
So
that's like, the best.
Yeah, so the it best. Was quite wild.
Well, even as you were saying at the beginning of the hour about the Bible, right? Those are letters.
Yeah.
Those are letters that have withstood the test of time that they would get and they would gather together and read them.
Yeah.
Of course, but all around. Yes. And so there's something about having that, and then you can hold it in your hand and how it could mm-hmm. withstand the test of time. But I also just want to share this too, something you said earlier, Evan, about, and also Becky, in terms of the impact of receiving those letters. And there are people who would be greatly impacted by receiving those letters. So mm-hmm. our military forces, as yes. Becky was talking about earlier, people who are incarcerated, and I know there mechanisms to send postcards, sort of this created digitally, but you can send a postcard. I've been looking into some of that. And also people who are shut in or don't get a chance to really get out and socialize that much would also be greatly impacted.
Yes. Great points. Matthew, briefly, are you a thank you card or thank you letter writer as opposed to thank you texter?
Yes, absolutely. I always write thank you cards for like birthday gifts and stuff and like graduation presents or other things like that.
You were raised well. And briefly, producer Megan Mack sends this note. The New York Times last year, Shivani Vora wrote in the New York Times that the thank you note or the thank you letter might have gone out of fashion for a little while as we all became much more digital. But it has, to Tina's observation, gained a little bit more currency or value again. And Vora writes, the thank you note may seem to be an archaic holdover from a time of Rolodexes and rotary phones, but etiquette experts and social observers argue that a handwritten expression of gratitude has never been more important. It can even be a gift itself. And Nick Layton is the co-host of an etiquette podcast called Were You Raised by Wolves, which I've never heard, but now I want to listen to. And he says, thousands of listeners tell us they are disappointed in how few people write notes anymore saying thank you. A handwritten thank you note isn't just a time-honored art. He says it's an act of thoughtfulness that makes our society a better place by encouraging a spirit of generosity and gratitude. Yes, love that. Also, what a great name for a podcast. To your phone calls we go, and let me start with Maureen and Webster. Hi, Maureen. Go ahead.
Hi, how are you?
Doing great.
I wanted to tell you about a letter that I supposedly wrote when I was 2 months old. My mother sent a thank you, as if addressed from me, to an uncle of mine who had sent something as a new baby gift. And in it, she was telling about her sisters helping her with the new baby and about my father working trick work, and so people would have to come over and help her during the night. And about the polio outbreak that was going on in the area. They were afraid to go places because of that. The letter had football scores from the high school games. It was just loaded with content. Now, obviously, I was 2 months old. I had no idea that I'd written it. When my father passed away in 2002, which would have been 50 years after that letter was written, my uncle brought it to me. And there it was in my mother's handwriting, 4.5 pages, both sides, you know, in her very small handwriting, basically a history of what was going on at that moment in time in the fall of 1952. Right. And she told about the family. She told, like I said, football scores. My father turned down an invitation to go to the Browns games with one of his brothers, and in my voice, she says, I really think it's because Daddy didn't want to leave Mommy. And, you know, just that type of a letter, it was priceless. And I was amazed that he had saved it for 50 years. So it was a nice thing to get.
Oh, wow. What a story, and a knowing nods in the studio here. What do you think, Tina?
Oh, warms my heart to hear this story. And I could tell even by the sound, the richness of your voice, how you've touched you are and have been to have that. It's a family treasure. And to know that your mom, you know, had that wit about her to write it in your voice that way gives you that double blessing to have that, and for your uncle to hold on to it for those many years also shows how much he was touched by it and thought one day, yeah, maybe he can pass that on to you. So I don't know if we'll be able to say that about a text message or an email because it doesn't have the handwriting, you know, that you'll see, and also being able to put that much content in it because we're always thinking about being condensed, whereas your mom wrote 4 pages, I think you said. So that's what we make films about, by the way. You know, we get these stories, these little nuggets like that, and then we try to extrapolate it and then put it in context of something so we can make a larger story. And that's the richness and the foundation of very good story making.
See, 50 years from now, I don't think filmmakers are going to put together a beautiful film. Instead of Dear Eleanor, it might just be like, hey, period, Evan, period, call me, period. Like, I mean, it just doesn't have the same richness to it. Let me just read a little bit more feedback. Pastor Peter Johnson from Faith Lutheran Church in Rochester says, Evan, I'm a big proponent of writing thank you notes to my parishioners. It's an extra level of care that takes some time to do, and people love it. I wish more people did it. Pastor Johnson, that's beautiful, and I have no doubt your parishioners appreciate that about you. Ted writes to say, Evan, he wants to put a little bit more emphasis on the necessity of incarcerated people writing and receiving letters. He says, when it comes to prisons, those are real black boxes in society where little information gets out, and the information that goes in is subject to censors. Mm-hmm. Writing with a prisoner a few years ago was eye-opening for me when I asked him to update me on his daily routines and living conditions. That's from Ted. That's a really good point, and that is another form of communication that is written by hand that will have to continue, I think, for that reason. But it's also just a reminder to us about how isolating incarceration can be, among many other things. So, Ted, thank you for that. Might be worth, you know, sort of exploring how we all maybe can be in touch with people who are incarcerated. And my guess is there are programs like that. Rebecca, you want to mention that?
And you have to also ask the particular jail, because we've done that, and they have guidelines. And there are words, like my mother was writing to this young man, and the letter was returned because it had a word that they considered not okay. It was I don't even remember the word. But so just call ahead, ask what the guidelines are, and definitely, you know, reach out to those in there.
Karen says, in the field of writing therapy, one of the creative arts therapies, writing a letter you will never send is a seminal healing practice. This can be writing to yourself at a different age, older or younger, or to someone in your life, someone you might be in conflict with, or maybe someone you've lost, or even a body part that is troubling you. The list of topics can be endless. So thank you, Karen. I really like that idea. Before we lose the hour, a listener was asking, where do you see this film we've been talking about, Dear Eleanor? So what's the answer to that, Tina?
Oh, thank you so much for asking about that. Well, we are still in the film festival cycle, and I'm proud to say that we won Best Score at the Diversity in Cannes Film Showcase in France earlier in the summer. So we don't have it publicly available, but I do presentations and workshops at RIT's campus. So please check out Diversity Theater at RIT for that schedule of information. We were just at Fringe at the Little Theater, and we will have other public showings of the film. So right now there's no public access to it, but we also have a website, DearEleanorFilm.com, and actually that one probably will be updated with the next screenings. So DearEleanorFilm.com. I hope that helps.
DearEleanorFilm.com. Please check it out. It's just such a beautiful and lovely idea. I'm going to squeeze David in Auburn in as well on the phone. Hi, David. Go ahead.
Yeah, so I wrote a letter to you. I even have the date on it. It was 5 September, and I dealt with an interview you had with Larry Stein.
I remember.
And and you were obviously found it unbelievable that he could show himself to be so casual about Trump when he was showing himself to be so sensible for, you know, the first half of the program. And so,
David, we went 55 minutes without mentioning Donald Trump, but go ahead.
I made a copy of that, by the way. I didn't just send you the letter. I made copies of it, and I actually send it to other people just to let them know how crazy the situation is.
I got your letter. We got that, and I always appreciate feedback like that. I think your observation was correct. I've known Larry for many years, and I think he's just a wonderful, congenial guy. And so I was a little surprised at that. But we'll put that aside for another day. I just want to say, though, David, thank you for sending that, because, you know, everybody communicates in different ways. And if letter writing is easier for you, please do it. And please know that here at WXXI, we get them and we read them. And to the extent that I can get back, we do that. But thank you for that. Let's wrap with this. I want to, first of all, thank our guests for being here. Tina mentioned where you can find Dear Eleanor. Everybody wants to come take a class with you now, but you have to go to RIT, I'm sorry to say. How are things going at RIT,
by the way? Oh, come on. Yes, please. We have a brand new shed building, our student maker space, and we have Magic Spell Studios there with Wegmans Theater, and we have wonderful community outreach courses and opportunities. So please, the community is welcome and encouraged to come to RIT's campus and to get involved. And we have our homecoming coming up in a few weeks.
And Becky Dupre, founder of Walt Day, write a letter today. How do people do that with you?
Well, first of all, don't forget that a stamp is a lot cheaper than a plane ticket. So if anybody's complaining about the rising of the stamp, but you can go to Facebook and go to Walt Day Group and check out some of the ways that people are being impacted or how to start your own group at your home or church or any organization. I will give you that detail.
Everybody just pulled it together on this wonderful Friday morning. And Matthew as well, by the way, who's probably got lots of things going on. Maybe he's sitting here writing a letter. Matthew, thank you for making time. Good luck to you.
You know, might not be too far off.
Thank you, Matthew.
Matthew, thank you for having us. Great insight from you. Thanks for making time for us, sir.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on.
Matthew's an RIT student. Tina Chapman DaCosta, founder and director of Diversity Theater and a professor and filmmaker at RIT. Lovely to have you. Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you so much, Rebecca Freitas-Dupre. Thank you for making time for us today.
Thank you for having me.
We've got more connections in a moment.